You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout.
Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles.
I still remember when you used to be now.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles. Today, we're going to hear from a young 16-year-old, Greta Thunberg, talking to a group of people about global warming and their responsibility for it. I think you'll find this interesting. Also, identity politics at its worst. I'm going to play a 41-second clip. This is not a fake. This is real. And ask you to respond. I'm going to do a commentary today on our lack of sensitivity or the desensitization of our emotions towards what we should be feeling very strongly about. I'm going to play you a clip from a medical doctor who vaccinated her child and she died. And then she got intentionally aware versus being intentionally ignorant. And what a difference. You'll be hearing her later on this week on her program. Of course, we are also going to continue the next part in our Vaccines and Autism series. Especially timely since there's an enormous push to condemn anyone who challenges the legitimacy of our vaccine schedules or the ingredients or the mandatory scheduling. So you'll find this of interest. Let's begin. This is from Oxford University in Great Britain. Researchers are worried that people with chronic disease are not being active enough. And this is at the George Institute for Global Health at University of Oxford. And it measured the duration and intensity of physical activity levels over a seven-day period and compared those participants with and without chronic disease. Well, needless to say, they found those with chronic disease, even those conditions that don't directly limit capacity for exercise, spent less time active. And there are hundreds of millions of people in the United States suffering from chronic disease, everything from being obese to heart attacks and heart disease and strokes to respiratory disease like asthma and chronic pulmonary obstruction to emotional conditions like depression and anxiety. We are a very, very sick nation, per population, the sickest in the world. So here's the idea. The fact that we have an illness in and of itself should not be an excuse not to exercise, because the more you exercise on a regular basis, anywhere from a low end of 100 to a high end of 300 minutes a week, the more advantages you have in getting your health back or staying healthy. And that's what this is finding. So there's just this false notion, if you're sick, take it easy. No, you shouldn't, because what's happening is your mitochondria are malnourished, your body's immune system has been affected, you're inflamed in all your tissues, and exercise helps relieve that. It helps detoxify, it helps give you positive feel-good hormones, the endorphins, which are terrific for you, helps you overcome anxiety and depression, helps you think with greater clarity, increases microcirculation to your brain and legs, to your heart. It's good. So let's get the diabetics, let's get the people with cancer and heart disease starting mainly a minimum of 100 minutes a week. If you're at 150 minutes, which what this study is suggesting, that's really good, and I'm suggesting double that to 300 minutes a week. From the University of Bologna in Italy, a meta-analysis, meaning many studies, found an association between the omega-3 fatty acids and dry eyes. Now, there's a lot of ways you can help people with dry eyes. You can increase the amount of vitamin C. You can increase hydration, B complex. It's all good. Plus, I find that people are taking silica, improve. Also, folic acid improves. B12 improves. And vitamin C is crucial. This along with rutin. Here's what they say. Results from a meta-analysis reported last week in the journal Corona concluded a benefit that supplements with the omega-3 fatty acids in the patients with dry eye disease and overcame discomfort and visual disturbances that can significantly impact quality of life and work productivity. And they looked at 3,363 participants with dry eyes, men and women. So that's important because a lot of times dry eyes is caused by a meibomian gland dysfunction and visual display terminal use, meaning the more you look at a computer or a cell phone, the more likely you are to have this. Also, if you wear contact lenses too much, and those are some of the primary causes. They looked at 17 different trials, and this was published again in Cornea. Now, another study from the University of Malta, as well as the University of Bordeaux, showed that prickly pears and seaweed benefit brain disease. Now, prickly pear, and I just purchased a whole case of it for like $7. Had I bought those individually, they're like $3 each in one of the health food stores. But I went to the best old farmer's market I could find in America. And there's where the local people, and these are people mainly from the Caribbean area and Mexico. They're the only ones who have the stalls, and they grow their own food, and you get a lot of exotics. And prickly pears is just one of them. It doesn't look like a pear, by the way. It generally comes either in green or in an off-red, like a rust red. And it has little tiny prickly spines all over it. You don't want to touch it with your bare hands because those little tiny fibers will stick you, give little tiny stick marks. But if you wear a piece, pair of gloves, and then you wash it and then peel it, this delicious fruit with hundreds of little tiny seeds, and you eat the seeds, you eat the fruit, and it's terrific for you. It's seasonal. And I've grown them because I have cactus, and they grow on cactus. They're a little like, you'll see like a little floret, a red floret. That's the prickly pear. In any case, extracts from the prickly pear and brown seaweed can help prolong life in an experiment, especially as a model for Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, because it disrupts toxic compounds. It interferes with those compounds. And we know that the onset of Alzheimer's is almost always inflammation in the brain. So if you can have any form of interference in that impact on the brain, you're helping a person delay or prevent Alzheimer's or dementia. This is published in Neuroscience Letters. So for all of you suffering or having a family member suffering from memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, just take some prickly pears and some brown seaweed, which also helps you lose weight, and mix the two and put them into a smoothie each day. That would be terrific. Next up, gut bacteria may have an impact on mental health. Now, I've mentioned this many times, and there's just continuous new information compounding the positive benefits of the old information. So there's lots of studies, hundreds of studies on positive gut bacteria, the good bacteria. This was done at Flanders Institute for Biotechnology as well as Catholic University in Belgium. And these little microorganisms, these little bacteria, set up home in your gut. But that is the least of it. Then they start to communicate, all of them, with your brain. That's why we say we have two brains, one in the cranium, one in the gut. And that impacts your well-being. As long as you have healthy bacteria living inside of you, and you do, by the hundreds of billions, you're going to be healthier across the board. You'll be less likely to be susceptible to depression or low levels of mood if you have bad bacteria or if you have too little of the good bacteria. Now, if you have depression, what would be the best bacteria? And that would be a diazoster. And as a result, we need good bacteria 2 to 3 times a day in the form of good probiotics in order to have the good bacteria colonize in our gut and then start sending positive messages to our brain. One good way of helping us, and this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Microbiology. And by the way, from Washington University School of Medicine, women's brains appear 3 years younger than men's. Time wears differently on women's and men's brains. And while the brain tends to shrink with age, men's diminished much faster than women's. And the brain's metabolism slows as people grow older, and this too is different from men and women. And that's why a lot of women are sharper or have more cognition and memory than men as they get older. And this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So now the question is, can men slow down the aging of the brain? The answer is absolutely yes, if they change their lifestyle. And I'm going to be doing a whole program, a webinar, on slowing down your lifespan, lengthening your lifespan, slowing down your aging process by at least, I'm going to say, 15 years. Also, mindfulness meditation and good night's sleep can reduce exhaustion in entrepreneurs, and this is from Oregon State University. So everyone out there that's ever owned a business, you know how many hours you have to put in. You know that the buck stops with you with everything, and that frequently is exhausting. So when entrepreneurs are feeling exhausted but can't afford the time for adequate sleep, they may be able to replenish their energy with mindfulness exercises like meditation. That's according to Oregon State University. Quote, you can't replace sleep with mindfulness exercises, but they can help compensate and provide a degree of relief. So just taking 10 minutes a day to do mindfulness practicing can help. And it's the equivalent of an extra 44 minutes of sleep per night. So what if you did mindful meditation in the mid-morning, someone else took a coffee break for 10 minutes, you take a meditation break, and in the afternoon the same. You'd be putting almost an hour and a half back into your quality of sleep. So that's good. It works. And research suggests that prenatal carnitine, carnitine, supplementation, which you should be taking anyhow because it's good to prevent heart attacks and maintain a regular heart rhythm, especially people with tachycardias and any form of irregular heartbeat, this will help stabilize. This, magnesium, and vitamin E, and taurine, they all work together with coenzyme Q10. I've helped a lot of people who had AFib, overcome AFib, especially athletes. Athletes, about one-third of all long-distance runners end up with AFib. In any case, this is an article appearing in Cell Reports and done at Texas A&M Health Science Center in the College of Medicine, talking about carnitine as a prenatal supplement to protect against autism in the unborn children. How about that? Brand new information. And you can get a vegan form of L-carnitine, by the way. So, new information that can help us. Also from Duke University, a new study showing that, once again, meditation eases pain, anxiety, and fatigue during breast cancer biopsy. And we should be using this. This was published in the Journal of the American College of Radiology. And finally, one last little report. In Israel, there's a study at the Technion Institute, Israeli Institute of Technology, and the Carmel Medical Center, also in Israel, that your cell phone is killing your sperm. For people who want to have a healthy child, intentional child, you don't want defective sperm. You end up with defective sperm from drinking alcohol. Any amount at all can cause defects in the sperm. Being around radiation, have your cell phone, especially your cell phone in your pocket, really bad. Not a good idea. If you want to have a healthy conception, you have to have healthy sperm. And in fact, the researchers conducted a study involving 106 men who were given a semen analysis, and they had found that men who wear their cell phones in their pants pocket had significantly higher rates of abnormal sperm, 47%. That's a big difference. So men, don't put a cell phone in your pocket, and because you could end up with a percentage of your sperm that is abnormal, and that can lead to all forms of birth defects. We don't want that. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Now we're going to take a break and come right back. And I don't have a lot of time because I've got so many things I want to share with you, but we'll take one of your phone calls.
Hi, Gary. My name is Frank. I've been a long listener to your program. In fact, I go back many years with the Natural Living Running and Walking Group, and I did 14 New York City marathons, several of them with the running group. You know, I'm a long listener, and I listen to your program, and I follow your protocol, you know, very closely. My question is about dental problems that I have, especially there's some old root canals that are problematic, and my wife and I, because of the cost of dentistry, have been going to the Stony Brook Dental School, which is good, which is very good, and the price is about half of what you paid at a regular dentist. But they want to retreat these old root canals there rather than trying to save the tooth. I recently saw a Netflix movie about root canals, called Root Cause, and it was very scary about how toxic they are. And I just want some advice about how to proceed here. I'm thinking that the tooth should probably come out. The movie did talk about. I can't afford to go to a holistic dentist because it's too costly, but my wife and I live on a fixed income, and that's why we ended up in the Stony Brook School. Want to know what your thoughts about root canals are, and how to proceed from here. I'm sure other people have the same problem.
Okay, you're probably right. A lot of people have root canal problems. And from my perspective, the best treatment would be to have a holistic dentist. And my suggestion is you call each one and just explain that you and your wife are on a fixed income. And could they do any compassion healing? And I believe that a holistic doctor should be the first one to volunteer to do some pro bono or some substantially reduced fees out of compassion for the person, because that's part of what it means to be a holistic therapist in any field. So don't count out the holistic dentist until you've spoken with each office. All it takes is one to help you. One of the problems with having any infection is that it becomes, especially in the jaw, it becomes a local focal infection. And these local focal infections are chronic. They're 24/7. And they're creating constant cytokines. and tumor necrosis factor alpha and interferons. The body is trying to fight that, so it has to take an immune response from other places in the body and bring it into that area. And one of the lessons I learned long ago was that if you want to help someone with larger conditions manifesting, first deal with the local focal infections, so then you don't have arthritis that's taking inflammatory, anti-inflammatory response out of your immune system in the knees, and gut, some form of gut problem, maybe Crohn's disease, diverticulitis, spastic colon, which again is causing your immune system to have to go there because there's not enough of an immune system to go every place that you have a local infection. Whereas if you eliminate these local infections, then your full immune system is ready to go on towards all of the problems. And it was Dr. Joseph Issels, the great genius physician in Germany, who I went to visit several times and spent a lot of time there interviewing his patients. And he had the highest success rate with terminal cancer of anyone in history. No doctor I've ever interviewed, no clinic I've ever been at, could prove the level that they had. And he had a almost 17% proven, a Dr. RDA at Leiden University had come in and done the analysis and wrote a paper published in a scientific peer-reviewed journal about his cure rate. His cure rate was the largest cure rate in the world. And so in any case, that's that. So he would take the local focal infections. He had a dental theater there in his clinic. And he would check all your gums. If you had any inflammation in the gum, that would be the first thing he'd work on, not your cancer. And he told me, if I work on the cancer first, the immune system is not there in a full measure. You need a full immune system to respond to cancer. So if it required taking out teeth, he'd take out teeth. And now what he did not have at that time, he did not have micro needles to infuse ozone directly into the root system and kill off the bacteria. Today we do have that. So it might take several treatments, but it's painless. They take a needle that's not even as thick as a hair, and they put it in, and then they infuse a certain amount of ozone, and then they do that a couple times, and then when they check, you generally that is healed. And once that heals, then you can save a tooth. If it can't, then you have to extract the tooth. So don't give up on holistic dentistry until you've contacted all of them, all right? Now, we're going to play two pieces before I go to my commentary. And I'd like your response. We have a talkback number here, and it's 888-874-4888. I'm going to play what I consider the new ugly face of what is an expanding effort to get us all involved in hating each other and dividing each other, not realizing that behind all of this are the same corporatists, the same oligarchs, the same people who want us fighting each other. And I've mentioned many times on this show the names and a little background of just a sampling of about 100 of the world's most important female voices. These are spiritual feminists. They don't come with an agenda to get people to hate each other. They come wanting us to work together, to love together, to respect together. And when people come with that message, there's a lot of people who want to hear it. And a lot of people want to grow. And a lot of people want to overcome biases and prejudice. Or a lot of people who don't have bias and prejudice just want some positive affirmation that we are not inherently evil if we're men, or if we're white, or if we're anything. Just like, think of how many people thought that people of color could not be trusted or shouldn't be. And that was coming from Orthodox psychiatry and Orthodox medicine. Benjamin Rush, the head of the First Psychiatric Association and the signer of the Declaration of Independence, was trying to cure leprosy that at the time he said was nigritude by bleaching their skin and getting their color of the skin lighter. That's how stupid and primitive many of the best minds in the country were, just like some of the presidents, like Jefferson and others, had slaves. They could be brilliant in some areas and absolutely so wrong in other areas. Well, today, we should be more evolved in dealing with each other, more respectful, more understanding, but we're not. There is, those in the media are just every single opportunity they have to exploit something for divisiveness and for opportunity, they do. So I'm going to start by having a young woman tell the world why we've got to do something and stop acting like we're not a part of the problem. We are the problem. From individuals who choose, well, I'm just an individual. What's it matter if I eat hamburgers and a hot dog? It's not going to do anything for the environment if I give it up. You personally give it up as one person? No, it will not change anything from tipping. But what if 20 million of us gave it up? What if we began to go plant-based, organic, local? Think of all that. What if we began to plant trees? Do you know that recently 1.2 million people planted 66 million trees in 12 hours in one country? Now, they're going to plant over a billion trees. A billion trees. That is going to act as a carbon sink to hold the CO2 in the ground and give us wonderful clean oxygen in the process. What if we had a mandate that we would subsidize and hire people for this to plant a minimum of 100 million trees per state? But states like California and other states that are losing their trees, we would plant a billion trees. And we would get people out there and get local groups. Now, who wouldn't want to slow down global warming by doing something we know is impactful, more trees, and by also stopping all trade with Brazil, as long as this person who is the new president wants to destroy the Amazon by privatizing it, selling it off, and letting him take all the hardwoods and destroy the lungs of the planet. We, the people, have to say to our legislators, no more trade with Brazil, and if he is continuing to privatize the Amazon. But we're not doing it. We're not even stopping even activists. I've seen activists in environmental marches. In fact, the March Against Monsanto, I've helped lead three times. And at one time, we had 6,000 members of my radio audience down in Union Square. What was interesting is how many people that I saw at the three-hour event went across the street, and all the restaurants that serve junk food, they were packing in there and eating. Where's the disconnect between you're there to say no to globalization, including environmental degradation, and then you're going to eat the very products that are causing deforestation and environmental destruction? So we have to do more as individuals. And if we don't, then it really is too late. This Greta is going to tell us about that. Then we're going to a feminist who has a particular idea about how bad men are. And I want your thoughts after this, and then I'll go on to my commentary.
I am 15 years old, and I'm from Sweden. I speak on behalf of Climate Justice Now. Many people say that Sweden is just a small country, and it doesn't matter what we do. But I've learned that you are never too small to make a difference. And if a few children can get headlines all over the world just by not going to school, then imagine what we could all do together if we really wanted to. But to do that, we have to speak clearly, no matter how uncomfortable that may be. You only speak of green, eternal economic growth because you are too scared of being unpopular. You only talk about moving forward with the same bad ideas that got us into this mess, even when the only sensible thing to do is pull the emergency brake. You are not mature enough to tell it like it is. Even that burden you leave to us children. But I don't care about being popular. I care about climate justice and a living planet. Our civilization is being sacrificed for the opportunity of a very small number of people to continue making enormous amounts of money. our biosphere is being sacrificed so that rich people in countries like mine can live in luxury. It is the sufferings of the many which pay for the luxuries of the few. The year 2078, I will celebrate my 75th birthday. If I have children, maybe they will spend that day with me. Maybe they will ask me about you. Maybe they will ask why you didn't do anything while there still was time to act. You say you love your children above all else, and yet you are stealing their future in front of their very eyes. Until you start focusing on what needs to be done rather than what is politically possible, there is no hope. We cannot solve a crisis without treating it as a crisis. We need to keep the fossil fuels in the ground, and we need to focus on equity. And if solutions within this system are so impossible to find, then maybe we should change the system itself. We have not come here to beg world leaders to care. You have ignored us in the past, and you will ignore us again. We have run out of excuses, and we are running out of time. We have come here to let you know that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power belongs to the people. Thank you.
Okay. This young girl, Greta, let the people at Davos, who are responsible hypocrites. They're responsible because they fly there in private jets. They fly all over the world in private jets. They're not vegan. They are engaged in globalization, neo-fascism, and like Mark Zuckerberg and others, George Soros, and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. But they're the ones who control the media. They're the ones who control the dialogue. And it was good that they actually allowed this young person to speak, because she spoke the truth. I'm going to go now to a medical doctor who now has found the truth. I want you to hear what she has to say. It's very short. It's only a minute.
Never learned in medical school how vaccines were studied, what type of clinical trials they went through, how they evaluated adverse reactions, how they even evaluated effectiveness. So after Victoria died, I started reading everything that is put out there. Anything that would lead me to a topic, then I would Google that topic. And if there were textbooks in relation to that topic, I would order them. And then
we'll come back to that. If we can't get that corrected, I'll just simply say that in the video, you see her in front of a shelf with, oh, it's back. We'll continue then.
Reactions, how they even evaluated effectiveness. So after Victoria died, I started reading everything that is put out there. Anything that would lead me to a topic, then I would Google that topic. And if there were textbooks in relation to that topic, I would order them. And then based on reading that book, I would order another book. What I have learned has shocked me. There has been information out there since the smallpox vaccine was created, linking vaccinations to encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain, which can cause death or permanent neurological disability. I've learned recently the placebo in a vaccine trial can actually be the aluminum or the mercury or another vaccine. I would assume the placebo was normal saline, which would be like water, something not harmful. In accredited, peer-reviewed medical literature, they have linked vaccinations to chronic autoimmune problems. The science is out there. People are just choosing not to look at it.
That's intentional ignorance. That's a new term I coined because I wanted to know why so many professionals who are more than intellectually capable of doing their homework and understanding what they're reading are choosing not to. because there's a conflict between what they've been taught in medical school and what they've been propagandized by the medical community and its magazines and those behind the vaccine industry to have only one truth, and that's vaccine truth. So the pro-vaccines advocates control everything, and anyone who challenges them is then immediately attacked, vilified, and their reputations destroyed. And so once again, a mother and a daughter and her partner, I don't know if she's married or not, they had to suffer, and the daughter had to die for her to become aware of a different truth. Now she'll be on the show in 2 days, and you'll hear what she discovered that all doctors could have discovered, but they're engaged in intentional ignorance, which then provides you with intentional neglect, because what you're not aware of, you're going to neglect. So I just want to share that with you, that a person had to die, her own daughter, for her to become aware, and now she's aware of how many other daughters have died or been injured. And this is a disturbing piece I'm going to play you now. It's 41 seconds long, and this is the far end of identity politics.
To kill all men. I am sick of being a baby factory that produces more men that will just, in the future, subjugate me. So the only answer to that is to kill male babies and just kill any man that you see, like in the streets, like any swinging dick, just kill him.
Okay, that's one person's view. And unfortunately, that person's not alone and has, if you look at the website, and I did, a lot of followers and a lot of people saying yes. What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. Now I'm going to share my thoughts on a separate issue, but it's also related to this. Oh, I just want to let you know that some upcoming guests, like Dr. Stephanie Christner, the psychiatrist, medical doctor, and by the way, get this, she was on the board of the National Vaccine Information Center, and her baby died from the vaccines. So that was her personal awakening after the fact. And then I have Jerry Ashton coming on, co-founder of RIP Medical Debt, a nonprofit humanitarian endeavor to try to get the medical debt paid by strangers of people who can't afford it. And they've done $500 million of erasing people's debt. On that show, which is the last day of the week, I'm going to give you the answers to how we can have affordable care. Now, mind you, there's a lot of good people who say, yes, let's have universal health care, as we should, but they don't know how to do it without incurring debt. I have come up with that formula. Not only will we not incur debt, we will contribute more than $1 trillion a year into the public treasury because of this program, and I've detailed it meticulously. So when I share this, you can do it. And then tonight at 7 o'clock, on the Progressive Commentary Hour, a discussion on Israel's flourishing intelligence technology and weapons industries. I have Professor Antonio Lowenstein, an Israeli-based journalist and documentarian, and also we'll be having another person on there who is extremely interesting, and I'll hold that until it comes. Now to some issues. I posted on my personal Facebook about 3 days ago, just a short 3-minute clip, and it's nonverbal. You read it, and here's a cab driver, and he's going up to pick up a person, take him to the airport, honks a horn, and no one comes to the door, and he waits, and finally he gets out. As he goes up to the door, he knocks on the door, and this very elderly, frail woman comes out, and takes his hand and says, could you help me take my bag here to the car? He does. And then instead of going to the address that she has given him, she says, would you please go downtown? He said, well, that's out of the way. She says, it's all right, I'll pay for it. So she goes downtown, he takes her there, and she has very specific locations that she wants to stop. And she just comments to him what these places were. for example, where her husband and her got married, in the church, and their first house in a neighborhood, a little house. It was the first one they, as newlyweds, they couldn't afford anything else, and that's what they had, and where she went to school. And so for the next 2 hours, she just took all this tour. And then finally, he took her to the address. And only when he got to the address and got her out of the car and was helping her with her bag, did he look up and see it was hospice care. Think. Picture that. Picture a person who's at the end of their life, still aware, still conscious, but they can't take care of themselves anymore, so they're going into a hospice care to die. But they wanted just to be reminded of all the wonderful things in their life in that little drive. Here's a question for you. And this was the point of the exercise. How many people, young people today, would have been patient enough to have waited for someone who was going to take more time to get someplace, or would have cared if this person was on the last journey of their life? I'm concerned, deeply concerned, that we're losing our sensitivity. We're becoming insensitive. Let me give you examples. Oh, we're very concerned about, you know, the stupid things that happen in the political arena every day that are really irrelevant to improving the world, stopping our crisis, or improving the quality of our lives. Example, when was the last time we had classes or had discussions with all people about a culture completely based upon free market values of profit over individuals' well-being? That's our entire marketplace, where a drug that a person may need and benefit them is beyond their capacity to afford it, so they die because they don't have it. And what about our war on drugs? Such a disaster, even an unmitigated disaster, more of a disaster than the prohibition. Just 250,000 people died in Mexico in the last 10 years from this war on drugs. And think of all the pain and suffering because we won't legalize it and deal with the real underlying causes of why people take drugs. Think of our profit over health, the failure of institutional universal health care, where we've profitized all of our health care system. Think of the identity politics across the media that fuel intolerance, bigotry. Think of religious bigotry. Listen carefully to the atheist. When you mock someone because of their faith, do you have any idea what that means to them? Let's say they go to a Baptist church, and part of going to that Baptist church and part of their beliefs is be moral, be ethical, be honest, help your community. Don't allow those who are suffering to suffer if you can intervene. This is what comes from a lot of these churches and synagogues and mosques around the world. But it's so easy to think a person, well, you're an atheist, so you're, God, you believe in a God that can't be proven. You believe in texts that were written by humans that are supposed to reflect the historical accuracy. It's not. And so you deconstruct them with an ideological hate. And so suddenly anyone who has a faith, who believes in faith, you've just backhanded them out of the room. And then you've got the deplorables. You backhand them out of the room. And anyone who voted for Trump, and yes, there are some really, really off-the-wall people. There are a lot of racist, foolish people who voted for him. But what about all the people who voted for him because it was a vote in protest against the vote that they wanted to give to Bernie Sanders? What about a highly literate, highly educated group that believe that Bernie Sanders should have been the rightful candidate and should have been legally, but the corporate left kept him out. The Democrat who control it kept him out. W. Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton, they also voted for him. And what about all the unions that voted for him? So when you suddenly take everyone who voted for someone out of protest frequently and you categorize them all the same, what do you think that does? Now, what do you want to bet that over half the people that originally voted for him, now that they see what a fool he is, won't vote for him in the future? But that comes with that religious bigotry. And how could you be so interested, as we should be, in intolerance towards Islam and call someone else being Islamophobic, but you don't protest when Christians are burned to death in Africa and in China, their churches are destroyed and closed down. So we're very selective, or we shouldn't be selective. It should be universal. We're against bigotry in any form. And what about racism associated with inequality? Where's our movement? And what about affordable housing for lower-income families? When was the last time any of you went to Camden, New Jersey, where I've been several times, to see thousands of people living in abject poverty, but we've desensitized ourselves to them? And what about a corruption of our entire government system? It's all corrupt. And why can't we be honest about it and resensitize? And what about corrupt judicial system that increases inequality by, if you're Caucasian, you get one prison sentence, but if you're a person of color, you get a far worse prison sentence? Our entire judicial system is based upon profiteering and punishment, not rehabilitation and trying to give a person a second chance in life. What about our economy based upon war rather than harmony and cooperation? Also, the decline in humanitarian values, such as empathy and caring for one's neighbor, and realizing a society is only as strong as the person at the bottom, and the loss of a sense of social justice. And what about the real historical past instead of the amnesia that we now engage in, and a grossly underfunded public education system? And what about higher education out of reach of many bright young adults because of high cost? What about the erosion of the nuclear family? What about the hyperactive patriarchy embedded in our institutions? And what about our treatment of the environment, especially corporate exploitation? And what about the plight of children, the plight of orphans, the foster care homes because their parents are in prison? And what about the elderly, like that woman, a culture that now marginalizes them, an utter denial of wisdom to be learned from those who reach their senior years? Our culture of nursing homes, a kind of medical apartheid, locking away the elders or those who are sick or infirm. Our entire approach towards death simply means to increase medical revenue. Death no longer holds any dignity in a society that lives by illusions and immorality. What about all the homeless? Most who are homeless, out of no fault of their own, but due to a system that does not value human life. What about our veterans, both those that are homeless or those with mental disorders? And what about the high rates of suicide? Are they just expendable appendages to modern society? And what about the mentally ill that we find on the streets that police are so quick to shoot instead of understand? Yes, and Native Americans, the horrid living conditions today on reservations, cutting back aid on education. They have some of the highest disease rates in the world, especially diabetes. Yeah, we are now engaged in what I call the tyranny of the majority, and that leads to identity politics. And what about all the low-income single parents and mothers? So, before we engage in identity politics, why don't we take a look at what we're not engaged in and see if that also shouldn't give us a moment of pause. Now we'll complete our program today by going to a topic that is posted. The entire article is posted, and it's about autism made in USA. There was a pro-vaccine person, very strong vaccine person. His name was DiStefano, and he acknowledged the possibility the vaccines might play a role in triggering some children's autism in 2014. And he chose his words very carefully in an interview. And once again, Cheryl Atkinson, who I mentioned on the last show, said, quote, "It's hard to predict who those children might be, but certainly individual cases can be studied." He said the absence of a blanket denial speaking volumes. To conduct such a study would be professional suicide, of course, which is probably why none have been attempted, but the records of the vaccine court itself which no one ever pays attention to, which have paid out over $4 billion since its launch in 1988 to indemnify vaccine producers against the inevitable lawsuits from patients and or parents whose kids went to the doctor healthy and came home irreversibly damaged. That speaks for themselves. Using the less radioactive term, encephalopathy, vaccine court records show some children whose autism onset immediately followed vaccination had pre-existing conditions that could render them susceptible to negative effects, including mitochondrial disorders and tuberous sclerosis. And the connection between vaccines and these conditions and autism has been officially acknowledged in multiple cases. So one area of the government, the most difficult to win a case in the vaccine court, says, yes, autism and other mental disorders come from vaccines, and we've actually awarded people. And the other agencies say, no, there is no association. This is how corrupt the CDC is and the FDA. When the government settled the historic case of Hannah Poehling in 2010, paying her $1.5 million-plus yearly payments that would amount to $20 million over the course of her life, after Poehling became autistic following a 9-shot vaccination visit, they qualified their seeming admission of guilt by stating that Poehling had an underlying mitochondrial disorder that made her vulnerable to vaccine damage and, quote, resulted in her autism. Hers was the first courtroom admission of any vaccine role in the development of autism and opened the door for 4,800 autism cases in awaiting deposition in vaccine courts. So, of course, they sealed the case. It leaked out anyhow. We got information, complete with diagnosis of vaccine-related autistic encephalopathy. And complete with Zimmerman's opinion, he had, quote, personally witnessed Poehling's developmental regression after vaccine-induced fever and immune stimulation, end quote. They may not have caused her autism, they would infer, but they triggered it. It's one and the same. It wasn't the first financial award to the family of an autistic child that admitted some culpability that was paid out in the first year of the vaccine court existence. In 1986, the court ruled a child's seizures, a result of this tuberous sclerosis, were triggered by the DPT vaccine, resulting in her mental retardation and autism. They did not admit the vaccine was entirely to blame, but acknowledged that it was a triggering factor in worsening his prognosis, since the age of seizure onset is directly related to the quality of life for individuals with TS. Now, these cases have quietly piled up among the millions, many likely saddled with gag orders to prevent parents from speaking out about their experiences. No matter how many whistleblowers go on record, how many books and articles investigators like Atkinson and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. publish, the CDC have repeatedly held their hands over their ears and screamed at the top of their lungs that they know of no evidence of a link between vaccines and autism, and to study such a thing would be a preposterous waste of time. Aiding and abetting their denial has been the FDA, too busy signing off on untested, unsafe drugs to care about the effects of those it has already approved, and the government itself, confident that money will always oil the wheels of justice. But they are wrong. They are extremely wrong on all this. This report, in its entirety, with all of our footnotes, and showing all the cases of proven autism and brain-related autistic spectrum disorder, are now there for parents who want to know the truth, for physicians who want to know and should know the truth, for nurses, and also for pharmacists. Stop living in intentional ignorance, because then you can live in perpetual denial. Learn the facts. Go to prn.fm and look at the powerful articles we have there, and including this latest one on Autism Made in the USA, and see for yourself. I look forward to compiling a new article, because I'm going to deconstruct the one that was published in the New York Times and defending those who attack, the pro-vacciners who attack anyone who questions vaccines. And by the way, a final thought, before you get one of these hashtags that have no depth of awareness, believe her, why do we refuse to believe the 2 million women whose children were normal, developing, healthy, happy until they got the vaccines and then regressed into states? Why do we refuse to acknowledge all the women whose daughters died after taking the Gardasil vaccine? Why do we refuse to acknowledge the women doctors who have come over from the dark side to the light side using complementary practices? Why do we refuse to acknowledge the legitimacy of all the women who have seen reversals in diseases in their patients because they're a chiropractor or they're a homeopath or an osteopath or a holistic clinical doctor? You never see these people acknowledged and acknowledged for having taken a step into the light of authentic healing. Do they not count? Are they not legitimate? Are they not what? Because until such time that we acknowledge all women and what their plight has been and what their story is, then we are living a hypocritical and condescending existence. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.